Morning on 88.1, it's Marilyn Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Dr. Lena Wen joins us once again. She is Baltimore's health commissioner and a regular guest on our program for a series we call Health Watch. Dr. Wen joins us once a month to talk about the issues affecting the health and well-being of Charm City residents. Good to see you, as always.
Nice to see you, Tom, and thanks for having Health Watch with me.
Indeed. We're going to do this every month because there's an awful lot going on. You've just you've been here now about a year, a little bit more than a year, and you've just published a white paper that gives a kind of snapshot. It gives a kind of overview of the state of health in the city of Baltimore. There's some very disturbing things and some things that, you know, show a trend upward. But what are your general impressions, you know, 13, 14 months into the job and then with this white paper?
Well, we wrote the white paper because there are conversations happening throughout the city on all kinds of topics people will be talking about, especially with the mayoral election coming, with the presidential primary coming as well. They'll be talking about issues like crime and jobs and education. We want to make the point that health ties into every one of these issues. So if you care about crime, you should also care about drug addiction. You should also care about historical policies of mass incarceration that come from using drugs. If you care about education, it's also important to note that if a child is unhealthy, physically unhealthy or mentally unhealthy, that they can't learn, they can't pay attention in school. And so for us, we published the white paper, as you said, Tom, to talk about what's going on with health in the city. Where are we with regard to our key metrics? But also, what are the services that we provide and what are our aspirations, both for services and for policies that we are advocating for on behalf of the residents of our city? Because we know it's an issue of health, but also one of equity as well.
Right. And in the very first couple of paragraphs of this report, you make the point, it's very important that you cannot separate poverty and racial inequity from health outcomes. I mean, people who are behind the eight ball in their living situation, if they have housing insecurity, food insecurity, if they have health problems because of lead, that affects everything. If they're living in high crime areas, that affects every health outcome, even things like life expectancy. I mean, there's a frightening statistic that you list where people in Roland Park live, some have a life expectancy of 20 years longer than people in Sandtown, Winchester.
That's right. And this is the recognition that we must have in our city that it's not just about health care. It's important to have great hospitals, and we do have some of the best hospitals in the world here in Baltimore City. But if somebody isn't able to access the healthcare because of transportation issues, or going one step further, if they're eating unhealthy foods because they live in a food desert without access to healthy fruits and vegetables, then how can I tell my patient that they should be exercising every day and eating healthy foods if they live in a neighborhood where they don't feel safe going outside and where there is no healthy food option? So we also see that those maps of health and life expectancy entirely coincide with the maps of poverty and crime in our city as well. And so we know that these inequalities manifest themselves every day such that the opposite of poverty becomes health.
On 88.1, it's Marilyn Morning. I'm Tom Hall. You're listening to our Health Watch segment with Dr. Lena Wen, who is the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. So the leading causes of death in the city of Baltimore, what are they, and do they differ substantially from leading causes of death in other places?
The leading causes of death here in our city are all related to chronic diseases, heart disease, cancer, all related to lifestyle issues like high blood pressure, diabetes, obesity. And so absolutely, we must focus on changing these lifestyle factors, but also recognizing that change in the lifestyle factors involves many decades, that those cannot be the only things that we're aiming for. So while we aim to reduce the consumption of sugary drinks like sodas that have no nutritional value, and while we aim to reduce cigarette smoking, because cigarette smoking is the number one cause of cancer and heart disease, that's important to do. But we also have to look to see how we can go what we call further upstream, meaning that we can aim at the point of somebody is coming to the hospital with a heart attack, or we can look to see what it is that we can do for our youth. How can we encourage healthy eating in our youth and really impact as early as possible, targeting the individuals who are the most vulnerable in our city, which includes our children? And so one of the programs that we're incredibly proud of is our BMO for Healthy Babies campaign, which is a public-private partnership with over 150 partners across the city. That program has resulted in record lows of infant mortality. We have a 50% reduction in the number of babies dying in their sleep as a result of home visiting programs where nurses and social workers visit women in their homes. Those are the programs that we have to promote because it's about investing as early as possible and going as far upstream as possible so that we are providing our children with the best outcomes they can to learn and to thrive as adults.
One in three children in this city live below the federal poverty line. And of course, again, it's all related to health outcomes, to be sure. So many households, 30% of Baltimore households earn less than $25,000 a year. So the relationship between poverty and bad health outcomes is just inextricable, isn't it?
Absolutely. And people have said to us, sometimes in criticism, why is it that now that we have the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, why is it that we still provide health services through the health department? Why is it that we still have two clinics in the city, Druid and Eastern, that provide STD, HIV, syphilis, hepatitis care? And we go to every school. We have school health services in every one of our public schools. People have said, well, why do you need it if everybody is supposed to have their own primary care doctor? That would be great if everybody goes to see their primary care doctor, if they all have access to that care. But I also know that on the first day of school, we will have thousands of children showing up who do not have their immunizations. Do I want to send them home, wherever that home may be, because thousands of our kids are also homeless on any given day? Or do I provide them immunizations in our schools? Do I let kids wait years to get glasses or even to find out that the reason they're failing is because they can't see? Or do we do vision screenings in our schools? And that's what we do. We do 44,000 vision and hearing screenings in our schools because we need to provide care where we are. That is what we do in the health department, and that's why we are the safety net and the provider of preventive services throughout our city.
Let's talk about HIV rates in Baltimore. Baltimore consistently ranks, in your report you notice, that we rank in the top five cities worldwide for HIV infection. Why is that, and what can we do to reverse that trend?
Unfortunately, Baltimore does have a high rate of HIV. We are one of the highest rates across the U.S. and consistently so. The reason is because of everything else we talked about with poverty and disparities. The rates of HIV nationwide also correlate with poverty and disparities, and certainly HIV is one of those areas where we do see high disparities. For example, African Americans here in our city are five times more likely to die from HIV than their white counterparts. And nationwide, I find this to be shocking. One in 16 Black men will be diagnosed with HIV at some point in their lifetimes. For us, the critical things to do, number one, is testing. Because if people don't know that they have HIV, they won't be able to treat it. And one in five people here in Baltimore City, which is estimated to be thousands of our citizens, 2,600 of our Baltimoreans, don't know that they have HIV. There's huge stigma that we have to combat. There's still the misconception in our neighborhoods that if you have HIV, it's a fatal disease. Whereas we know based on science that if you have HIV and you get treatment today, you will live the same life expectancy as somebody who does not have HIV. So it's become a chronic disease, one that can be treated, one that can be prevented, but people have to know that they have it. And so we provide access to testing services and linkages immediately to care if they are diagnosed with HIV.
You write that Maryland in general has the second highest risk of HIV infection, I guess, in the country. White women, though, for example, have a 1 out of 880 lifetime risk, and that African-American gay men have a 1 in 2 lifetime risk. That's half. I mean, is that, do I have that right? Am I reading that correctly?
You are reading it correctly, because here is the shocking statistic. that when we look at HIV, it is the example of widespread disparities. And if anything, it's amplified disparities, that there are racial disparities amplified upon socioeconomic disparities. Then also the statistic about one in two African-American men who have sex with men will get HIV in their lifetimes. It's because of the stigma that exists in the community around being homosexual, around having HIV, around being African American, around being an individual living in poverty and being homeless. And there are so many other factors that are wrapped up in this, which is the reason why we in Baltimore City were glad last year to receive a national grant from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to work with our community partners specifically to prevent and treat HIV in the community of African American men who have sex with men and transgendered individuals. And in particular, we are hiring people who are from the communities that we serve. We very much believe that these individuals who have the lived experience are also the ones who are the most credible messengers. And so we're getting out the word, for example, about PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis, and about testing. And again, really emphasizing that we have the ability to end HIV in our lifetimes, but we have to begin with prompt diagnosis and testing, and also with immediate linkage to care so that people can immediately get treated and recognize that this is something that's not about taking away our power. This is important, that it's not about labeling us with a diagnosis, but it's about empowering us to get the care that we need and to speak up for these critical health services.
Dr. Lena Nguyen is the health commissioner of the city of Baltimore. She stops by Maryland Morning every month for our Health Watch series, in which we examine the challenges that our city faces addressing the important issues of health and safety. We'll have a link to the white paper that Dr. Nguyen has just released. It's called The State of Health in Baltimore. We'll have that on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Always good to see you, doctor. We'll see you next month.
Nice to see you, too. Thank you, Tom.
Coming up, a conversation with leaders of three organizations who are working to improve Baltimore's dismal record when it comes to voter turnout. We'll check in with Build, Black Girls Vote, and Be More Votes after a break for the national headlines. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.